Good noon. It is Wednesday, June 3rd, 2026. You are watching a special Q&A edition of Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamaal Thomas. If you're watching in the 12 noon hour on YouTube or Rumble, we are live and we are taking your questions, comments, insults, whatever you have to say. And so please put them, type them into the live chat on Rumble or YouTube. And producer Robbie West, that's him right here. He will put them up in the live chat, and Jamarl and or myself will respond to anything you have to do as best we, to say or do as best as we can. We are looking. We're normally here Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern time, but Mondays and Wednesdays we do the Q&A. Sometimes we skip it. Mostly that's my fault, and we will. But this is one of those days when we're not skipping it. We're looking forward to interacting with you guys. I know Robbie, to kill some time, maybe while the questions start to come in, he's pretends to know some shit about Christianity. I'm like, he's no Ted Rall. A lot of
That's true.
people call me Saint Theodosius. A lot of people say I'm at the right hand of God. A lot of people say that. I mean, I don't say that because that would be sacrilegious, but other people, I can't stop them from saying that. So anyway, we could have a little discussion at some point, maybe sooner rather than later, about whether the gospel or the scripture requires us to be kind to foreigners in our midst or the strangers in our midst or
Well,
not.
kind, yes, but you have to invite them all in at the detriment of your people. That's the difference, right? I mean, that's the rub. Like, the Bible does not preach open borders.
Well, the Bible didn't have to preach open borders because when the Bible was written, borders were open.
Well, I'm pretty sure there are armies and things, and they would contest mass migrations of people going from one place over to another. But personally, I'm more interested in what's going on in Kuwait right now. That's what I'm looking at.
All right, so why don't you tell us about that? By the way, some breaking news as we go in. This morning, JT and I covered this hostage standoff in Bakersfield, California. That's come to an end. The FBI shot the alleged hostage taker to death. I don't know if we have to use the weasel word alleged or purported or whatever. Once the person's dead, you can't really they can't sue you for libel. But anyway, the point is, like, the alleged perpetrator in this act, it could well be true that he was innocent. Anyway, the point is they shot a guy that they say was the hostage taker. That hostage takeoff has come to an end at the Chase Manhattan Bank. And also, Robbie, you were informing me just as we went on air that Iran struck Kuwait.
Yeah, Iran's lighting them up as we speak. So the Kuwaiti International Airport has received significant damage. The video that's coming out is impressive. Kuwait's Civil Aviation Authority says the latest Iranian attack on the airport caused injuries and serious damage to a number of its facilities. It looks like the fuel tanks are no longer exist. The terminals are wrecked. It's, yeah, I mean, I
Same
don't
thing,
know.
by the way.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at now. I don't know if this is a retaliation for the U.S. shooting at their tanker
It
yesterday,
is.
or is this?
They say it. That's what Iran says it is.
It is. I mean, they've been lighting them up all night. Like, it hasn't just been one attack. They've been going at it. And apparently, they hit the U.S. fleet in Bahrain, with multiple strikes, helicopter bases or whatever. But yeah, this is beautiful. Like,
I have no
they
problem with
stopped,
it.
they finally have accepted this kind of. Look, people like me have made this argument that the U.S. is a monster roaming through the forest, and that any overtures of peace, pragmatism, is just looked at as weakness. We're in the law of the jungle. And while it's true that states should do their best to avoid loss of life and those type of things, and it's true that they should try to abide by some level of morality to separate yourself from the aggressor. All of that's true. Weakness is not accepted. It's just not. And
Absolutely.
what they're doing now, where they're putting a cost on the fact that the US was going after their ships, is what is necessary. And you can make an argument should have been necessary early on. They're doing it now, though. This idea of unilateral attacks by the US, at the very least from Iran's point of view, is over. And by the way, one last point. It's taken a little bit, right? Like, meaning, if you notice, Israel wasn't really attacking Iran directly, nor was the United States. That was a huge taboo. But they slowly worked their way into it until they got into this groove of, right, we can hit Iran directly. Well, same thing is true going in the opposite direction, where Iran tepidly was, don't mess with us, true promise one. We're serious, true promise two. True promise three hits the base as a demonstration of capability. And now you have effectively all out war where they're hitting U.S. bases back, 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 back.
So do you think that the ceasefire is dead now?
They're still, I would wager to you, they're still going to argue that it still exists. They're still going to say it exists. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But they're still going to say, yeah, the ceasefire is very flimsy and a fragile ceasefire. They're still going to talk about it in those terms. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. Obviously, this doesn't look like a ceasefire where you're effectively blowing the shit out of Kuwait all night and blowing the hell out of Bahrain all night. But they will talk about it in those terms.
Yeah, no, I mean, to me, that looks like a war. And I've got a thing going through just scouring the internet, and there's coming up reports, I can't verify any of this, that Bahrain is now starting to round up Shia Muslims, which if that's true, that could be interesting.
It probably is true.
It has happened already earlier in this conflict, so yeah. I'm sure it's true.
Yeah.
So we should get to the questions. Just some basic housekeeping. We try to get to all the questions in the Q&A segment, but we prioritize and we frankly most appreciate the Super Chats and the Rumble Rants because, you know, this is a show that we need money to in order to keep going. And to in order to, you know, there's upfront costs. And frankly, you know, JT and Robbie and I all have to get paid. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to keep doing it. So thank you very much for those of you who are able to do those. But like I said, we're not going to discriminate too harshly against you guys who are not able to do that. So please, if you don't hesitate to put in your question, if you can't afford to do that. And I'm trying to think what else we need to do.
Is out here saying, well, we don't need the United States help anymore. Thank you, but we don't really need it.
By the way, Kuwait Airport is a huge airport, and they're reporting that some flights are open out of other terminals. Terminal one is that seems to be out of commission for the foreseeable future. But I mean, I don't know about you guys. I mean, JFK is a big terminal, has eight terminals. If terminal one was on fire being bombed, I don't know how happy I'd be flying out of Terminal 7.
Right. 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 Can you imagine that shit?
It's like, it's fine. Like, yeah, really?
You'll be okay. And also, Hezbollah just released a new video about 30 minutes ago for footage dated from June 1st, targeting a cluster of IDF troops for the first time attacking at night using thermal imaging. Which is wild.
Yeah, FPV drones.
I wonder whether getting that. I wonder if Vlad's hooking them up.
Trent will be mad at me if I don't remind everyone about the structure of the YouTube watching protocols, because he is Robbie is cottons to Rumble, but Trent cottons to YouTube. I'm impartial. I'm like Switzerland. YouTube, it's $5 to watch. If you want to be thanked on the opening, on the closing credits by your username, that's $20 a month. And for $50 a month, you get to talk to JT and I in a limited chat, just the whoever is a $50 donor. That's exclusive. We're doing the first one this weekend is the plan. All right. And if you are on Rumble and you want to be part of that $50 or the end credit thing, the 20 or the 50 thing, but you're on Rumble, no worries. You can contact Robbie West at westglaciergaming@gmail.com. And then you will then be able to PayPal us that money on a regular basis. You can arrange through PayPal to do $20 or $50 a month or $3 a month or whatever you want. And the address there is deprogrampodcast@gmail.com. Okay. So we got some comments if you guys want to get to them or whatever. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Jack Samuels, Ted, since you're based in New York, at this time, what letter grade would you give to Mayor Mamdani and why?
Interesting.
That's a good question. I like that question. And if you have more questions, type them in.
What would you give him? Because you said beforehand that you thought he was going to be like AOC for the most part.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty much turning out to be true. Look, it's been pretty good in terms of his involvement in remaining active, it, like being down on the ground and being accessible to ordinary New Yorkers. That's cool. Yep. He is continuing with his policy of trying to tax the rich, particularly through the pied a terre tax. He's been pretty smart about negotiating with our center-right DNC corporatist governor, who really does control a lot of the purse strings, Kathy Hochul in New York State. So he's managed to have a good working relationship with her. That's not always something that New York mayors have had, like de Blasio and Cuomo didn't get along. So that's all going well. I would say he could certainly be more accessible to ordinary people. I think also he probably, I'll tell you, I'm going to hold one thing against him. It's going to surprise my left-wing fans. There's an economic development office that's basically just what it sounds like, the job of which is to encourage new business to come to New York and to encourage old business to stay in New York. That's the office that helped turn New York into a major site of filmmaking in the 1990s and 2000s. Basically, they created an economic development office to reach out to Hollywood and say, hey, come make movies here, TV shows, and so on. That office, he hasn't filled that spot. He became mayor on January 1st. It's June 3rd today. And New York is a major business hub. It's suffering dramatically after COVID. And I could see him thinking, okay, well, that's not really my base. But you got to cover all the bases when you're the mayor. So, all right. So that's just all my way of saying it's a mixed bag. Because it's early on, I'm going to give him a B+. That grade could get worse unless we see some serious accomplishments. And we haven't seen this mayor undergo any kind of crisis yet. So that's going to be where the proof is in the pudding. Is there going to be an ice riot? Is there going to be, a major storm or whatever, terrorist attack? Then we'll know what this mayor is made of.
By the way, I agree with you about the economic office. We're in a capitalistic system. I don't care if you call yourself socialist. You have to make people's lives better. Jobs, yeah. Productivity, abundance, especially abundance. Like, just because you're lefty doesn't mean you need to be poor, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's the cliche that the right likes to say. Like, oh, under socialism, you're all equal and you're all miserable and you're in line, you're lining up for toilet paper. Not if it's working right, you know? Here we go. Thanks so much. Thank you very, very so much for the dollar donation from FUSO. I worship Jobu, but I still can't hit a curveball. Jabu? Jobu? J-O-B-U. I don't know.
Oh, Jamu? Baraka?
J-O-B-U. Do you know who that is?
Not a clue. Nary a one.
If you so, for free, you can come on and clarify. Okay. my faves, comments on the Albania's protest and even burning the prime minister's home. The prime minister sold protected land to Kushner to build a resort, but the Albanians were not having it. U.S. could use some pointers from them.
So I was in Albania for 2 months.
Oh, yeah. You know Albania.
I don't know if I say I'll know it.
You've been there a lot more than most Americans, yeah.
True, because when I first was leaving, I was like, yeah, I'm going to Albania. I found rent for $300. And my mom was like, where? I said, Albania. I was like, it's in Europe. It's in Europe. Where? Yeah,
like in War Dogs.
Yeah. Well, I had pointed on the map, like, okay, it's right here. It's this little place right here. Albania, it's Europe, but it's a rugged Europe. I said that one. Mm-hmm. It's rugged. The prime minister better watch his ass. They're burning down his house.
Beans right? are spicy. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's a spicy year. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. It's a more rugged year. I mean, I was in Vellore. It's kind of like this ocean resort type thing. And they had it on sale because it was kind of going into spring, into summer. So it was still in the kind of off months. So they were trying to get the rent, like rent on properties off the people. It was nice. Like in the mornings, I would do the show at around 1 o'clock. After the show, I would, because the show was three hours. I would walk down to get coffee. And I would have to walk down like a mountain or a hill type thing. And this guy would be taking his goats out with him. And so sometimes you'd be walking down there and be goats that would be walking with you as you're walking down the hill to get to the store. Like, it was a life. And yeah. It was a life I could have gotten used to.
I love that's so cool. By the way, if you're just joining us, this is the live Q&A show with Jamarl Thomas and myself from Deprogram. Which means we're not generally covering anything other than the most breaking news. We're just answering your questions and comments, and particularly the super chats on YouTube and the Rumble rants. Okay, so the
pizza was fantastic. They had fantastic pizzas. It's because their pizza. I don't know how it's. They had their pizzas was of a particular type. I don't even know if they use sauce or whatever. It's something about it that was so good. It nailed it.
I gotta say, it's hard for me to beat New York pizza. But.
Yeah, well, same here. Same, New York pizza is really good, but it's don't think of it like a New York pizza. Think of it like a different thing unto itself.
Yeah,
but
it's own thing. President Jafar, do you know the concept of whiteness and blackness is a recent construct propagated mainly by the British Empire? I guess I did know that. It's true. Yes. It doesn't really turn up in ancient history.
Yeah, but it's the issue now. I mean, like, because at a certain point, after 200-300 years, that shit becomes a thing unto itself.
Yeah.
But whether it's real or not, it's in people's minds.
Yeah. I mean, it makes so little sense in so many ways that, yeah. But, yeah.
It's practical. I mean, for America, it was practical. Hey, that guy's black. If he tries to run, grab him. Everybody else is white. It's like shirts and skins, like when we're playing football.
Right, labeled.
That guy has his skin on, you know, like he's on your team. It's uncomplicated, right?
Yeah. It reminds me of one time I was driving with my ex-wife in Oakland, and there was like a whole hubbub of like up ahead, like chaos, like cars parked willy-nilly. And I was like, oh, is it the cops? And it was just, black people hanging out. And then I go, well, oh, no, it's the other team.
It's the other.
I was actually kind of like relieved. Okay, so anyway, if you so and Iran, so far I just Iran. I ran all night and all day. I couldn't get away. Thanks for the dollar. Primal Barbarian. Thanks for the dollar. What do we think of the claim that COVID was made in a Wuhan lab? P.S. Robbie, you looking mad cute today. Woo, Robbie. Better watch out.
No, I appreciate that. I'm not even mad. I'll take the cute though.
Yeah, cute. Cute's not bad. You don't have to do anything with it. You slut.
Yeah, cute. I take the adjective. I mean, or the verb. Yeah, or the adjective. Sure. No, that's an adjective. They use it like an adjective.
Man. Yeah, it's an adjective because he's saying I'm cute. I'm not being cute.
No, that's true.
Yeah, so
don't
it's
be cute. That's not cute.
Yeah. No.
Right. Don't play it cute. All right.
I wouldn't know how to do that anyway.
No, that's true. I've not seen that in you. Although, you know, who knows? All right. So Wuhan Labs 3. Look, the CIA believes it came out of a Wuhan lab. Not that it was intentional, that it was an accidental leak. That seems to be, I mean, I'm going to say I believe that to be true. I think it's what happened. I think it was an accidental release. I think that the fact that Dr. Fauci had a financial interest in this facility contributed to the desire not to pursue and investigate that narrative until it was really too late. And you can ask, does it matter? In an epidemic, it does matter. The point of origin really matters to help to control it and to try to identify the strain and the way it developed. So absolutely, scientists would have appreciated as fast as we did move to deal with COVID, which for our society, we did move lightning quick. It's would have been even, could have been faster. Lives might have been changed, might have been saved. So, yeah, what do you think?
I don't have any qualms about it coming out of the lab or coming out of Wet Market. I think it was politicized, which fucks with me.
Yeah.
So because it doesn't sit in a box that is unmolested by the political circumstances, if that makes sense. Like so many, Trump screaming at the top of his lungs, it's a China virus. Okay, I mean, dude, like the US had interest in that. Let's say for the moment that it's true that it came out of a lab. As you point out, Fauci had interest in it. The United States was working with this particular laboratory. So it's not like China did something that all of a sudden gave the world a virus.
It certainly wasn't intentional.
No, and obviously it wasn't intentional, right? So
I mean, if it was going to be intentional, it would not have been released on their own territory.
Right. And, you know, when the financial crisis came out of the United States, we didn't seem to give a shit about it. Nobody said it was the U.S. financial or whatever the hell.
Right.
Everybody know, obviously, it was located here and damaged a lot of people. I'm saying it was a mistake. There's that. Two, it was politicized. It turned into this kind of China virus thing, which made it toxic to even point out that it might have came out of a lab. As you point out, Fauci had financial investment in it. Fauci should have been fired. And the reality of it is, all of those people that were screaming about the COVID thing, Fauci didn't make the situation any better. It was when I remember the article came out in Popular Mechanics that pointed out, hey, I know everybody's saying this came out of a wet market, but we don't know that. And that was the first time that there was heavy pushback on this idea of, well, this could have came out of a lab. Because up to that point, it had been this kind of conspiracy theory that it came out of a lab and only right-wingers were saying it. And Trump was calling it the China virus and everything else. So it made it toxic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have an issue with it coming out of a lab.
And they smeared the pangolin.
Yes.
The poor, innocent pangolin.
Yep. Who
all he's trying to do is just eat some ants and everyone's fucking with him.
Yep.
Yeah, not cool. Don't fuck with the pangolin. All right, this is going to probably be the beginning of a Robbie segment. President Jafar, Jesus was given refuge in Egypt in his teenage years. So we were in the earlier show this morning talking about the fact that the Bible specifically enjoins believers to Jews in the Old Testament, Christians in the New Testament. Christians in both, to help the stranger, welcome the stranger as if he, profusely. This is not a world that had distinct borders or border crossings. If people came even in fairly large groups, they just migrated. Then people were moving around all the time in the Middle East and around the world. So I guess my question is, you can want closed borders and still be Christian, but I don't see how you can be Christian and say that harsh treatment of foreigners or strangers is consistent with biblical teaching.
Okay, so let's unpack a couple of things. First, yes, Jesus did grow up in Egypt. It happened after Herod committed the massacre of the innocents, where 2-year-old boys and younger were slaughtered. So what people don't understand, because people are historically illiterate.
Historically, that's not 100% sure that happened, right?
Well, the Bible says it's true, so I'm going to go with it. So Egypt was a province of the Roman Empire. So that's like saying, well, I moved from Alabama to Florida or from North Carolina to Virginia. Okay, so what? It's the same country.
It's really a vassal state with independent rule, kind of like Judea
not in the time of Augustus, because you got to remember that's after the Roman Civil War, after Antony and Cleopatra were put down. So it was fully annexed. If you're talking about during Caesar's era, because Cleopatra was the last pharaoh.
Right.
So when she was deposed,
they ask you a question.
Yeah. So I mean, you're done. So Egypt at that point was not a foreign country. It was a fully fledged Roman province because it lost a war. It was conquered. So yes, Jesus was a refugee. Yes, the angel told Mary and Joseph to go into Egypt. And yes, that's what they did. And they were there until when Jesus was a teenager. that's where one of the slurs that that Jews will have about Jesus, saying that he learned black magic while he was in Egypt and that he was a sorcerer. That's where where that lie comes from.
They say that okay, I had never heard that one.
Yeah, it's in the Talmud.
Black magic in Egypt?
Yep, because Egypt back then was famous for sorcery and magic and mysticism and that kind of thing. So one of the things that they say is that Mary was a whore. Jesus is the product of a Roman centurion named Pantera, and that Joseph was the illegitimate father of Jesus, and that they went into Egypt, and that if he grew up there, learned black magic, he was a sorcerer. And because he blasphemes God, and that's how he performed all the miracles, they said that's why he's boiling in hell today in excrement and semen, because of his sins of being a sorcerer. So that's where that tradition comes from with the Talmud. Now, to get to your question, Ted.
That's fucking gross.
Oh, it's incredibly gross. It's also incredibly blasphemous. Now, to get to your point, you got to remember the entire point of Israel, the kingdom of Israel at the time, was to be a light to the nations. Yeah, you could be a foreigner. You could 100% go and live there. You could sojourn there. But for you to become a citizen, for you to be able to go and do actually become a fully fledged member of society, and you can read Deuteronomy and Leviticus. You can fact check me on this. I don't really want to go into a full on Bible study now. It would take 2 hours. But basically, if you would convert to the Old Testament religion, and you would put away your idols, put away your false gods, and you'd be able to assimilate. What you were not allowed to do, if you were a sojourner, like you couldn't exploit the foreigner. You weren't able to beat them or enslave them, that kind of thing. You had to treat them decently, which, by the way, I agree with. I don't think that I'm probably the most radical person on immigration that either one of y'all know. And I oppose what Trump is doing in regards to ICE, because I don't want people being brutalized. Sending people back home is not brutalizing them. That's sending them back home. You know, you don't put them into a prison and give them a piece of bread every day, beat the hell out of them, or go full on Israeli and just start raping people. That's not what I want. I want them to go home.
I think honestly, Robbie, that I know you've said that before. And I think what happens is you don't say that very often, but you say deport them all very often.
Yes.
And because the way that this administration is doing it is abusive and violent and murderous in some cases, people are thinking that they think mistakenly that you approve of the way it's being done. That's sort of the way Americans kind of think, right? Like it's sort of, if you say like, I'm not voting for Kamala Harris, people are like, well, then you must be voting for Trump. It's like, no, I'm not. But they, you know what I mean? That I think that's what's happening.
Well, maybe, but I mean, all you got to do is just check the public record. I mean, I've said this a crap ton of times.
I know.
This
is how people go. Well, you always have to be like, I don't like the way they're doing it. The way they're doing it.
Yeah. Then just ask the question. I'll tell you. I mean, there's a right way and a wrong way to do something. The right thing to do is mass deportations, close the border, and put the American people first. I was born in 1976. I grew up under Reagan. Reagan did the amnesty with the promise that the borders would be closed and that this will never happen again.
Yep,
that promise has been broken repeatedly every decade that I've been on this mud ball. And I've had enough of it. I've had enough of American wages being suppressed. I've had enough of our industrial base being sold off and sent overseas. I've had enough of American workers not be able to get a job that pays well. I've had enough of inflation going up 2 to 4 to 5% every year, but wages are actually decreasing because inflation destroys the purchasing power of every single dollar. If you want to fix the economy, you've got to restore the value of labor. You cannot do that if labor is cheap. I don't understand why people make this racial. I don't understand why this is even such a radical concept. Why is it that every other nation on this planet is allowed to have borders and have a government that advocates for its people and its citizens, and that's okay. But if you do it here, you're a Nazi. If that makes me a Nazi, so be it. I'll be your fucking Nazi. I don't care. But that's where I stand.
Okay. I like the clarity, so I don't want to take a shit on the clarity. Okay, what are our thoughts on the million Black New Yorkers under Eric Adams who lost their jobs for refusing to get the COVID vaccination? Should they be reinstated? I don't know the numbers, but I do know that certainly lots of people of all races lost their jobs. I know some nurses and stuff. I interviewed them for the Wall Street Journal. They should be reinstated. And these are people who need a $1.8 billion slush fund for government weaponization. They should get their back. They should get their back salaries, plus interest, plus some kind of compensation for the inconvenience that they went through. That should not have happened. The thing is, the only exception I would make is for people in the very early stages of the pandemic during the Alpha variant, when we thought that the vaccine reduced transmission rates, then at that time, when people were working as, for example, first responders, I could see that was required to do. But that knowledge, it changed very quickly. We knew within about 6 months, as soon as they went with the Beta and subsequent variants, we knew that, like Omicron and so on, that there was the vaccine was very useful in many ways. It reduced the symptoms, but it did not reduce transmission at all. Did not make you less contagious. And as soon as they found that out, that policy ought to have shifted instantly.
First, I agree with the first part of what you said. Second part. See, I guess the catch becomes, yeah, you're right. It didn't necessarily stop transmission. It prevented the person from dying. You know, it's like the person had a much higher chance of surviving if they caught it.
And it's only that, right? So if you and I work together and I get the vaccine, I'm just as likely to get COVID. Theoretically, my symptoms won't be as severe, but my odds of giving it to you are exactly the same whether I have the vaccine or not.
But if your symptoms aren't as severe, are your chances given it to me exactly the same?
Yeah, because I'm still going to have symptoms. They're just not going to be, so I'm not going to suffer as much personally. So it's for my good, but...
I guess I'm okay with that. There needs to be some kind of reconciliation for the COVID stuff. There were so many wars that I had during COVID, and people hated me.
And I was one of the first people on the New York subway when they said you don't have to wear a mask anymore. And I was like, great, I have asthma. I fucking can't stand wearing a mask. It's horrible. Yeah, I feel like I'm going to die.
I was the opposite. I thought if I get COVID,
people were giving me so many dirty looks on the subway. And I'm like, it's legal not to wear a mask. Fuck you. You know,
I would have been one of those people giving you dirty looks. It depends on when, though. At a certain point, I was done with it. I was like, okay, I'm out. I'm not getting any more shots. I'm fucking done with these masks.
Well, if you had asthma, you'd have trouble with the mask.
Yeah, but see, I thought I was going to die.
So did I. That's why I got so many shots.
Well, I got two. No, I got three, I think.
I got eight.
Are you shitting me?
No. You there's so many friends, left-wing friends, who are mad at me for that. They're like, you're going to have, all the spike proteins. You're going to fucking... I'm like, listen, my lungs are my Achilles heel. They always have been. I get bronchitis. I've had swine flu. I've had pneumonia more times than I can count. I'm like, as soon as I heard evil respiratory disease, I'm like, if it was a 1% chance that I was not going to die, I was taking it. If you had a 99% chance that I'm going to die from taking the shot, I would have been like, done.
So I thought I was intense on this run, and I had three shots. Because look, I was traveling and shit, and I was wearing two masks. I was standing 6 feet away from people. I was being a dick to people when they didn't have a mask when they were coughing. It was giving dirty looks, motherfucker.
Oh, when people were coughing with no mask, on the train, I was not happy.
No, me either. Yeah, and that was even abroad. even abroad. I went to Georgia during COVID. And I remember the woman wasn't wearing a mask, but people weren't wearing masks. And I'm looking at them like, you motherfuckers, you're going to get me killed.
And people get crazy that way. I got to tell a story. I got to tell a story. Robbie, you'll like this story, I think. So this was pre-COVID. I had a cold. I get on a plane, and I think I'm coming from California to New York, pretty sure, because there's New Yorkers on board. Anyway, I sit next to this like very haughty, like uptight, stick up the ass blonde. And she and I was coughing, right? And she's like, every time I coughed or sneezed, she's like, and she just couldn't stop doing it. And finally, I'm like, look, I can't help it. What do you want me to do? Like, wait out 2 weeks before I come home? I got no choice, right? Bear in mind, pre-COVID.
Right.
Finally, so this is very dickish. Very loudly, I finally said, ma'am, would you please stop with the huffing and puffing? Lung cancer is not contagious. This is my last flight, and I would like to look out on the clouds for one last time without listening to you carrying on like this.
You said that?
And loud enough that everyone in the, like a few rows around could hear. Anyway, the point is, so when we land, we all stand up, right? And there's several people in the rows around, and they start yelling at her. They're like, you fucking bitch. Like all this. And then like the flight attendant came over and was like, shit, put her hand on my shoulder and said, don't worry. You never know. These days, anything is possible. You might make it. And I told her, you know, I feel like you might be right.
Are you serious?
It's a miracle.
Yeah. Now, so I got one COVID shot because I worked for the hospital. And so I tried to get the religious exemption and everything else. And it was just like, no, you've got to do this. Like, you have no choice. Either if you don't, then you lose your job. Mm. And it was just, it was either comply or commit economic suicide.
Right.
And so that is really when I started becoming really radical on this whole overreach. Like, the government does not have the right to tell me what I must put in my body. And so that's just, that's just sick.
I mean, technically, they didn't force you.
No, they did.
I'm with you.
No, they did, because if you took Medicare funds, which hospitals do, you were required to take the shot. That's part of Donald J. Trump's Operation Warp Speed. And that's one of the reasons why he lost me, like, forever. Where I, 2016, I was a Trump supporter, and I'm the biggest critic that man will ever have. Because he's a tyrant.
Ted would have agreed that you should have taken the shot, according to what Ted said in the beginning, because we didn't know.
No, I mean, I think at the very beginning, I could see why they wanted to do that. But how can you miss it? Like, they learned that wasn't true, but they kept the policy in place long afterwards.
True, I accept that. I do accept that. The other part is, technically, they didn't force you.
They did, because if you worked for a facility that took Medicare funds, you were required to take the shot. If you did not take the shot, you would lose your job.
Right.
So part of that is there not a requirement? Either you comply or I'm going to put you in the ground, economically.
Right. You could always walk.
So, and do what?
I mean, come on, like finding a job is not easy.
I'm not saying it's easy.
I can walk and do what?
I'm not saying it's easy.
Well, you're talking about both sides of your mouth here. It's like, they didn't make you, they didn't force you to do it. They just threatened you with economic destruction if you don't comply.
Yeah, that's sort of like when they tell like cartoonists and writers, like, oh, you know, you can say anything you want. Maybe just no one will publish it. And I'm like, well, that's a distinction without a difference, right? Because if you can't earn a living as a commentator and nobody sees what you have to say or hears what you have to say, then you are censored. In fact, the word censorship does include editing and refusing to hire people. It's not just the government. I mean,
I'm more of a hard ass on this than both of you. I'm sorry. It's not that I think it's great that the government is trying to tell people what they should or shouldn't do using the corporation in order to force people to do it. It's not that I like it. But there's something to be questioned about whether first responders should be inoculated against the shit that they are going to encounter on the job.
It's their choice.
Well, maybe it shouldn't be on some level. I mean, if I'm put it this way, if I am working for a medical organization, mm-hmm. and there is a particular virus that's coming into, I mean, that's like the military, where the military inoculates its soldiers for shit that they're going to encounter when they're going into certain zones or war zones. I mean, well, in this case,
the military, they own you. I mean, you're called a GI.
That has a pretty dark history.
It does.
And right now, like, there's no Ebola vaccine. Doctors are traveling from the U.S. and other Western countries to Africa to treat people. They're not protected. They're not, I mean, the vast majority of infectious diseases to which a healthcare worker can be exposed in a hospital or EMS setting are not. Either there are no vaccines, or there can be no vaccines, right? And I always wondered when I first learned about this, like, why aren't nurses and doctors just dropping dead all the time, right? I mean, they're working people all day long, but they're not. They build up immunities.
Oh, you mean now? I mean, I'm saying during COVID they were.
No, I mean, yeah, sure, but I mean, like, yeah, during COVID they were. That's true.
During COVID they were. I mean, that's the first line that we're dealing with.
I think the vaccine for the Alpha variant did reduce transmission. Therefore, that's a different set of rules.
Well, the problem is that viruses are always mutating, and so as you go down the list, I'm going to use y'all's word evolution. As they evolve, they become more virulent, but they become less deadly. That's what you want to have happen.
Right.
And Delta was more deadly, was just as deadly as the Alpha variant, if not more so, especially with the transmission.
But one thing, and I can tell you this because I was involved with it. Say, for example, if you were in a car accident and if you died because of the trauma, if you had COVID, they would count that as a COVID death, not as a vehicle death. Or if you were shot, they would count that as a COVID death. I mean, I kid you not. I was there. That was my life. That's what I did, and it was such a scam and a fear mongering.
I'm laughing because it's true. It's like the guys. If it wasn't for COVID, you know, he would have survived.
Well, because it was such a grip. Because what the hospitals would do, because all the elective surgeries were suspended. That's one way that they make their money. So how did they recoup that money? They would bill all these deaths as COVID deaths to the hospital. But to your point. I mean, I'm sorry, the government, if the government can then tell you what you must purchase or what you must put in your body, you have no autonomy. You're a slave. You're not a citizen. That's the hard distinction that I have. Who owns me?
We got more questions, so I'm sorry to interrupt, but
that's fine.
Keep going. All right. President Jafar. Thanks for the five. Since Robbie doesn't want immigrants in the U.S., why should the Middle East want Ashkenazis from Europe in the Middle East backed by the United States? I don't think he would disagree with you.
They shouldn't be there. The state of Israel should not exist. I mean, they should be in Poland. They should go back from the land from which they spawned. They should not. Listen, I'm an equal opportunity offender when it comes to this. The Palestinian people deserve to, that is their land. That's theirs. Their ancestors, the Arabs, took it from the Romans back in 680. It's mm-hmm. been theirs ever since then.
That's true.
The Jews got kicked out by the Romans because they revolted.
But Rob, a tiny, like, 2% of Jews, like, stuck around all that time. Isn't that kind of like, if you just keep your foot in the door, then you get to come back in and take over the whole house?
Well, does that mean that the Greeks get to go back and take over Anatolia and Constantinople?
Of course. Obviously.
Well then, I mean, if that's the standard, sure. But it's not. But if you're going to build a nation based on a racist, and I use that word deliberately, a racist and genocidal ideology where you say that we are superior to every other person on the face of this earth because we are spawned from our father Abraham, even though I'm whiter than Robbie with red hair and freckles, I'm going to call you a liar. Second, I'm going to say that if you can take it, then go for it. If you can keep it, and if that's your ideology, then go with God. But the American taxpayer should not be funding you, and we'll watch you just get driven into the Mediterranean Sea in about a week.
All right.
Best of luck to you.
More questions. F. you said, thanks for the dollar. Mamdani needs to catch those manhole sewer trolls that keep evading police. I don't think anyone's stealing manhole covers. Although there's some evidence that manhole covers have historically been stolen.
Really?
For scrap metal. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Austin Conway, is Trump the greatest crime boss in American history?
You're a better one to answer that to. You know, American.
There's
I would say
lot,
yes.
There's been a lot of crime bosses. You got to say Al Capone, maybe. He ran this huge criminal enterprise. I mean, Donald Trump's way up there, though. You know, I'm going to say maybe George Washington, because George Washington, his grift was crazy. I mean, by today's standards, he would be worth more than Bezos and Musk combined.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he sold Washington, the land that is the District of Columbia, to the federal government himself. It was just marshland. He surveyed what was then the Western frontier, and then chose the best plots of land, bought them. By the way, none of this was considered wrong at the time, but by today's standards, we would say. And then he sent in the federal troops to clear out the Indians to make it safe for the settlers, thus raising the land values, and then rinse, lather, repeat. I'm going to say George Washington. Exile. Is blaming rich people the same as blaming corrupt people? I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so
either. You're not corrupt.
Not all rich people are corrupt, but great wealth usually, to quote Balzac, right? Is it Balzac? Behind every great fortune is a crime? Yeah. Or is it Voltaire? I can never remember which.
But when we say rich, that could be $1 million or $3 million, technically. I mean, mm-hmm. But we're talking about great wealth. We're talking about like Bezos. Or Musk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or are you talking about just rich in general?
I think rich in general.
But I can write a book. And if I get rich on a book, is that me being corrupt?
Yeah, no. Not. I would say not. Captain Obvious, thanks for the $4. Ted, did you ever go and research the Calhoun experiment? Yes, I did. Also, the reference to missing the curveball came from the movie Major League. You know, I like sports movies and sports comedies, and I've never seen Major League. So that goes on my list, even though I'm not
a
sports
person. Sheen, right?
Pardon?
Charlie Sheen, Major League.
Yeah, and I like Charlie Sheen and his
rock. That was actually a good movie.
Really?
Yeah, it was actually good.
Mr. Baseball is my favorite sports movie. You ever seen
is
that?
It?
Uh-huh. Oh, it's hilarious.
I never seen it.
Yes, Tom Selleck. Back in the 90s. Absolutely hilarious.
I remember that.
Incredibly inappropriate. Freaking love it. This Major League gets sent to Japan, and it's just awesome. Like he just insults the entire country. It's
Eight awesome. Men Out, one of my favorites.
What's the most inappropriate movie you think you've seen?
Sports or in general?
In general.
Oh, it's got to be, for me, it's either got to be Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS or Freddy Got Fingered.
No. I remember Freddy Got Fingered. That's with Tom Green, right?
Yeah.
Heartbreak Ridge.
Heartbreak Ridge. Now, what's Heartbreak Ridge?
So it's a Clint Eastwood movie. It's based he is a gunnery sergeant in the Marine Corps on his last tour. He's about to get pushed out, set just before the invasion of Grenada. Well, we're on YouTube, so I can't say the word. Uh-huh. But the word referring to a bundle of sticks being burned is used often. It is incredibly inappropriate. It would be considered homophobic by today's standards. Uh-huh. Absolutely just awesome movie. Highly recommend it. You will learn so many colorful phrases.
There's no real bad Clint Eastwood movies, except maybe the one with the orangutan.
His best one, I think, is Outlaw Josie Wales.
Oh, that's a fantastic film.
Awesome movie.
Also, The Beguiled, oh, awesome.
Yeah, but seriously, get Heartbreak Ridge. Watch it. It will change your life.
Okay. I'll check.
All right, I will do that. All right. Exile, thanks for the $2. Peaceful Constitutional Military Legal Rescue. I don't really know what that's a reference to. If you do, let me know. Frank Friel, thanks so much for the $5. It looks like the U.S. is willing to sacrifice Northern Israel. in a bluff over Beirut, Israel will attack. Will Iran stick to it?
Yes, they'll stick to it. They have to. They don't have a choice. But because, look, the issue is credibility.
Yeah.
That's important. It's not, that's not a nothing thing.
And they didn't have credibility before. They frittered it away. So there's
got it now.
They got to get, right. Yeah, they have it again. And now they have it and they're not going to like give it up. Yeah.
Right. That's deterrence. And they've gotten accustomed to hitting and blowing up shit that belongs to the U.S., which probably feels good. Probably feels good to be like, hey, we blew up that base. Woo, yeah. That place is on fire.
I caught COVID only once, and it was at the Metallica concert at SoFi Stadium.
Was it worth it?
I like Metallica. Not enough to see them live, I think. But, you know,
yeah.
They're all right. Yeah. They got a lot of shit for their stance against music pirating. Remember that? They were like really anti-Napster. It's like, you're not cool. You want us to pay for your music? What?
Yeah, it's that part, right? It's like, dude, I'm doing a job. What the fuck? I mean, like, imagine for the moment if somebody was like, yeah, we don't want to pay. That always blows my mind when somebody says, well, I don't want to pay for a psychic reading. It's like, but they're doing work. Even if you think it's bullshit. Doing work.
Well, yeah, you're if in a lawsuit, you're never cool. You're not the cool person. I mean, it's like I know because I've been the plaintiff in several lawsuits. And it's like, yeah. Like, if you were cool, you wouldn't sue. It's funny, in the LA Times thing, people, like, they did support me, and but they kind of thought I was the defendant. They kept saying, like, you know, like, defend Ted Rall. And it was like, well, there's a moral defense, but I'm the plaintiff here. You know, I mean, I'm suing them. I mean, they did fuck me. That's why I'm suing them. But still.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
By the way, Tropic Thunder is the movie that I would think. With
Robert Downey Jr.
Black guy. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. in blackface.
Yeah, in blackface.
Crazy.
That is the funniest shit ever.
Ben Stiller.
Yeah, that is the funniest fucking thing ever. And what's wild about it, they asked Robert Downey Jr. Apparently, you know, he stayed in character the entire film. Like, he stayed in that character. He didn't deviate from the character.
I know.
Oh, that is the funniest shit ever.
That's so funny. Yeah, no, that is a crazy film. It's the kind of thing where you're like, I'm not sure you could make that now.
You couldn't make that today. I don't even know how they made that shit then. I mean, no. Tom Cruise with the knuckles and shit like that. Oh, yeah. Man, that's just wow.
No, they just had like carte blanche. They're just like, we're fucking going hog wild.
And it worked. And it worked. Yeah.
Well, Freddy Got Fingered, by the way, is, you know, granted, super bro-y and very masculine. Yep. Fucking great, though.
But there's nothing wrong with... See, and I agree with Robbie on this one. Like, there's a place for men to be men. There's a place for women to be women. These things don't have to eat each other. And for whatever particular reason, they do. It's like, people can't just... It's like, oh, look at him sitting there with his legs open. It's like, what does it bother you?
I don't
like,
need to
see that food, right? They'd be like, he's sitting there like such a man. And his legs are open. And it's like, okay. He's sitting there. He's getting comfortable. What's the fuck is your issue?
It's so funny, right? Like on online dating, ladies get really upset if they're like, oh, all these guys, and they're like, picture of them holding a fish, or like they're in their gross tank top shirts or whatever. I'm like, fair. Okay, fair. I don't know, because I have not looked at, you know, a lot of male dating profiles. But the ones I've seen, like, over people's, you know, like, over my mom's shoulders were like, oh, God. But, you know, you ladies have your cliches, too. Like, you know, yoga on the beach. Like,
yes.
Come on, stop. Like, don't need it. Don't want it, don't need it. Oh, look, we're drinking tea. No tea. No, I'm not having tea with you. Horses are people too. Papa Ted, thanks for the $5. Could you regale us with another Rawl family tale from the war? If JT and Robbie have any interesting family stories, I'd love to hear as well. Love the shows, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, from the war. Okay, here, I'll tell you a story from the war. So this one's not a fun story, but it's a story anyway. And trigger warning, I don't give those ever, but here's a trigger warning. This is a disturbing story. If there's a kid listening, get them out of here. All right. So my mom her she said that her teachers were really, you know, they had a lot of corporal punishment in school. And during the Vichy regime under the Nazi occupation, she was basically ages 5 to 9. So when she was 7 in second grade, living in southern France, she had her second grade teacher, she said, was the only really nice, kind, like, teacher who strove to connect. She was a young lady, to connect with the students, instead of being like an old battle axe who would take the, go back if you missed a story and you know, whack you over the face with a ruler or something. And Jamal, there you are. Okay. So you were gone for a second. So she loved her second grade teacher. Anyway, one morning she comes during class, a couple of Gestapo agents pull up in front of this little school in the middle of nowhere. They march in with the head of school, and the German guy announces to the class in French, "Your teacher is a terrorist. She has been fighting with partisans against the government and against the German occupation authorities. And today you are going to learn what happens to terrorists." And so they took her out, and they gathered all the kids out in the courtyard. They tied the teacher to a tree, and they formed a firing squad, and they executed her in front of the kids. Then they left her body hanging from the tree while the kids were ordered back to class. The body was still there at the end of the day when they filed out. That's
hardcore.
Yeah.
See, we don't have to
recover from something like that.
Those lessons here in the States. Because we should know what that shit is like in real life, in practice. And that's, they forget what the fuck happened in the Second World War to the detriment of Europe.
Yeah. I never, knowing stories like that, I never understood why France went into an economic partnership with Germany called the EU.
Yeah.
That's what it was. They were the two founding states. I mean, look, you don't have to stay at war. I'm glad they're not, but really?
That's hardcore. I don't have any stories like that. My the wife that I never had, my ex-girlfriend, she's Austrian. She has stories like that, which always blows my mind when I hear it. Because it's so, we don't have stories like that. Like, not, let's say, Americans per se, not, you know, like that's, yeah. Like some of the shit that she told me over the course of the war was, you sit there and you think to yourself, like, what? Because she's telling from an Austrian point of view, like, meaning from the point of view of the aggressors, right? The Nazis.
Right.
As opposed to the point of view of the French, who, you know, and even then she'll say something like, yeah, the Russians did so-and-so. And it's like, you guys fucking invaded. Are you serious?
I wonder why the Russians ever came there.
Yeah. She told me one story one day where she said it was her grandfather. God, I hope she's not watching this. She's gonna lose her shit. She told me her grandmother, I think it was her grandmother, was in the farm. Because many of these groups had farms. I mean, even now, her family has a farm. And that the Russian soldiers came to the farm. And, you know, there was a lot of rapes that took place as vengeance for what was taking place in regards to the Soviet Union and the number of people that they killed. And, you know, there's stories about how, like, there would be a person getting raped by multiple people and the parent would just have to watch, or at the very least would be like, hey, could you please give my daughter a break, because 5 guys have already raped her today and she needs a break. Like, it was stuff like that happening in regards as a norm. And she was talking about how, like, soldiers came in, just broke into the house, and she was using her broom basically, like, says, like, get away. No, she was able to get away without being molested, but some of the stories, man, are just mind-blowing. But again, it's like it's being told from this opposite point of view, this point of view of the aggressor and the grievance of the aggressor. Like, oh, they took my grandfather, they put him in a prison camp, and they didn't send him back for 20 years. You fucking invaded. It's like, are you serious? But it's fascinating hearing that point of view. I don't know.
Oh, it's just wild. I mean, especially because, look, let's face it, not all Germans voted for Hitler. Many Germans lived there on sufferance. Many were socialists. They didn't hate, they didn't like him. People were drafted. I mean, when my grandfather was basically jumped into the French resistance, and I'll tell you this story because it's important. He was really pissed because he wasn't going to join the resistance. He thought they were a bunch of wankers, but he worked for the PTT, which is the Post Telegraphe et Telephone, which was stringing telephone lines in rural electrification. Even during Vichy, right? They were bringing power and phones to the countryside. And those guys, they were all CGT, Communist Labor Union, all tied in with the French resistance. They're like, come on, Charles, you like explosives. We have things to blow up. Come on, let's do it. So anyway, he didn't want to join. He had one pair of shoes, dropped them off at the cobbler's place on a Friday. Guy said, come back Monday. Over the weekend, the guy's deported because he's Jewish, right? My grandfather comes back to his house and he's like, fuck those Germans. They fucked up the economy. They fucking invaded the country. They're oppressing us. They treat us like shit. And now they fucking stole my shoes. And he was so fucking pissed that he went and told his comrades at work, wearing like a piece of tire under a strap to his feet, I'm in. So they're like, all right, well, we have to know that you're for real. We have to know that you're not a spy. So you're not with the milice, which is what the Vichy secret police was called. So you have to kill a German in broad daylight in front of everyone, so everyone knows that you did it. So they jumped him in like in a gang. And so they to prove his bona fides. So he and his comrade waited outside a bistro. And late in the afternoon, two Germans tumbled out from the Wehrmacht, a sergeant and a private. They followed them down the street, shot them both in the back. One died right away. The other one just wouldn't fucking die. They kept shooting him. And then there's his comrades like, get their papers, get their wallets, because they can use those papers for forgeries and stuff like later on, right? So he stole the guy's wallet that he shot. And they ran to the safe house. He opened the wallet, and on the guy's ID card for the Wehrmacht, there was a stamp that indicated politically unreliable. And my grandfather told the story, and what that meant was he was a communist or a socialist. He was a conscript, didn't want to be there. It's like he didn't volunteer. He was anti-Nazi. They drafted him and sent him to the war anyway. And my grandfather told me, so Friedrich, which this is what war is. War is where you have to go and kill someone who might be your comrade under conditions, who might have become your best friend and most trusted advisor, and you have to kill them. That's what war is. He carried that guy's, when he died, I found the dead German guy's ID in his wallet. Oh. Carried it with him his entire life, and also the pictures of his two daughters back in Berlin.
Wow. This is why I don't celebrate. When I used to watch the 12 Day War, there was a theme on my show about me drinking coffee while Israelis got crashed, basically smashed, Israel got smashed. It was obviously to relieve some of the pent up frustration from watching them commit a genocide. And it felt like God's vengeance, watching missiles slam into refinery and people and places, et cetera. When I watch Ukraine, I don't have that feeling for that exact reason. I know many of those guys the majority of the country didn't want to war. Many of the people who are thrown onto the front lines and getting killed are just conscripts. It's like haberdashers, dancers, that snatching people who are walking their dogs, stuff like that. It doesn't thrill me. It doesn't fill me with anything other than this is a catastrophe and shit like that that makes it, that nails it. Oh, that's horrendous. Yeah. That is horrendous.
The only story that I have is from my grandfather's grandfather. We have his diary still. So he, when Virginia seceded, his family lived in what's now West Virginia. They lived just south of what's called Chet Mountain. So it was a small little farm. My family did not own slaves. They were just like most people. They were just normal farmers. They weren't plantation owners. When Virginia seceded, my ancestor, my granddad's granddad, so I guess my great-great-grandfather, he went with Virginia, joined the Virginia Home Guard, eventually became a member of the Army of Northern Virginia, virtually served under Stonewall Jackson, and then later under Jeb Stuart. His brother sided with the Union. So just the old trope of brother against brother was really the real thing.
Yeah.
When the war started, he sent his family, so they'd be safe, to go live with his wife's mom outside of Atlanta. Well, when Sherman went down there with his march to the sea, they hung his wife and their four kids, and he found out about it. After the war, he found out about it. And at Appomattox, she never surrendered. For him, it became personal. So he made it his life's mission to hunt bluebellies, bluecoats. So he was a guerrilla fighter for like the next 3 years. That's what he did. If you're in a blue coat, he was going to kill you. It was just a matter of revenge. Well, at Christmas of 1868, he went home to the family farm, and his brother was there on the porch, and he was wearing his old blue coat.
Oh, boy.
So he went up, and this is all in the diary. He pulled his pistol, and he was about to blow his brother's brains out right there on the porch.
Christ.
And their mom screamed, and his dad came out and said, "Son, the war is over." And so my great-great-granddad, he holstered his pistol. He did not stay for Christmas. He hugged his brother, said, "I love you." And then he went to Mobile, Alabama, remarried, and that's where my line comes from. I have his sword. Because he never surrendered, so we still have it. My brother has the diary.
Wow.
And so that's So that's just a
literally brother versus brother.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, that happened a lot. And for him, it was a political issue till it wasn't. For him, I guess is whenever you have an army. And that's one of the reasons why Sherman is so vilified in the South. It wasn't army versus army. It was total war against the civilian population. And it didn't matter if you're white, black. They would rape and kill slaves just like they would anybody else. It was just total, it was total war. That's right. Why Sherman said that the South will remember this for 100 years.
But that's the rub, though. I would argue that's what war is. I mean, I don't know how, I know people talk about these noble wars. I don't believe in noble wars. I don't think those things exist.
People who fight them don't believe in them.
Yeah. I mean, you've uncorked the worst aspects of humanity onto a population.
I used to think that the guys who would hang out at the VFW hall were a bunch of old prick assholes bragging about their war crimes. Now I realize the truth. They hang out with each other because they're the only people that can relate to who've been through the shit with them.
Right.
Yep, my dad, though, he was a Korean War veteran, and all I ever saw that man cry twice. Once was when his mama died, my grandmother, and the other time is before I left home. Well, no, it was after I got home, after he had stopped drinking, and we were reconciling, and he never really talked about his service, and when we were reconciling, he apologized for everything that was going on. He told me a story about they were on the Pusan perimeter, and the North Koreans had taken this little village, and they're trying to provoke the Americans to attack because they tried to take the hill. They weren't able to. So the Koreans, what they did is that they took the men out, executed them in front of the American lines. There's no response. Then they did it with the women. And then lastly brought out the kids. They started executing the children. And so the lieutenant that my dad was serving under, he said, "This is against orders, but I want to go save those kids. Who are y'all going to join me?" Because they're band-aiding the babies. Because they realized the response that they would have on an American soldier. So of 250 men, it was him and 17 men that survived. My dad was shot twice. He said it was a terrible price, but they saved those kids. And I think it was just the stuff like that, to your point, Ted, that's why he was drinking so much. I didn't understand when I was younger.
Got it.
And there was no, I mean, there's no such thing as PTSD or anything. The war happened in the 50s. So you go home, you work hard, and then whenever you can't, you self-medicate with booze. And that's why he was such a violent drunk. And that's,
by the way, you know, one thing that changed with Korea and subsequent wars, Robbie, is that after deployment, they weren't allowed to stay with their units very long. They basically were sent home right away. In World War II, there was a lengthy process of reacclimatization to civilian life, in many cases up to a year, where they stayed in their units in Europe or whatever, like rebuilding, reconstruction, and whatnot. And so often, you know, soldiers would come back, but they were with their units and they were able to decompress and download with each other. And the World War II vets were in generally much better shape as a result of that than the Korean and their Vietnam vets, who were a fucking basket case.
The last time that before my dad died, we went to McDonald's. Said I'll tell you this story. We were sitting at McDonald's. We were there in Pensacola, Florida, and we were having hotcakes and sausage, best kind of breakfast ever.
That does sound good right now.
And this little Korean girl, she must have been in her 20s, maybe. My dad was wearing his Korean War hat. He was old, frail, bent over. His body was shot. And she came up to him, and she bowed to him and said, "May I give you a hug? Thank you." And that meant more to him than anything.
Guys, we're over, so we should wrap it up. Shall we just bang through the last few questions and then call it?
Yeah, we got that.
All right, cool. All right. Let's see. Exile the Knights of Malta. Operation Rescue Darth Vader. Make him yelp wahoo. Thanks for the $2. I do not understand that. Do you speak French, Ted? Oui, je parle français. Digital design and innovation. Actually, no one voted for Hitler. Not true. People voted for Hitler on a number of occasions. There were several elections leading to the seizure of power on January 30th, 1933, and when the Nazis, with Adolf Hitler at the top of the ticket in the parliamentary system under Weimar, 37% of the vote. Yeah.
Yeah, they got to calm him the fuck down. It was like, yeah, there's no way he's going to. Whoa. Like, yeah, he's not going that way once he gets in office. Yeah.
I'm laughing because I usually knock over my mic. Okay. And yeah, it's just not true that nobody voted for. And okay, Robbie, from Exile, I have a question for you. Do you like culinary mushrooms? And would you grow them and be a culinary mushroom tycoon who moved to Montana?
What? I do like mushrooms.
Eating more than culinary mushrooms.
Yeah, I do enjoy eating mushrooms. My wife does not like mushrooms, but there's nothing better in this world than squirrel gravy with mushrooms and rice.
Squirrel gravy.
Do you have a particular type of mushroom you like?
Just the little white ones.
I like lion's mane a lot.
I don't eat mushrooms.
Would you not like them, or do you just not eat them?
I'm very choicy. I am extremely choicy. My uncle used to tell my mom, if we're going camping, make sure you send food for him to eat, because he's, I'm very choicy.
Really?
Yeah. Extremely choicey.
Wait, is this another word? I've never heard choicey. I know picky.
Picky, same thing. Same. Uh-huh. It just means the same thing.
Yeah. But you grew up in the woods, you eat whatever doesn't eat you first. So, plump cabbage, acorn soup, I mean, wild onions. I've done it all.
And I don't like my food touching.
I've had wild onions.
Yeah, I'm very choicey.
I like choicey. Choicey's good. It's funny. People are confused by me because I'll like eat anything once, but once I determine I don't like something, it's dead to me and I'm done.
I just started eating pigs.
Pigs?
Last year was the first time I had eggs, like talking about, like where I actually.
Pigs or pigs?
Eggs, E-G-G-S.
Oh, really? God,
when I tell you I am picky, I am picky. In fact, the only reason I ate it is because I didn't want to make a scene when they offered it to me in Indonesia. I killed that thing. That thing was fantastic. That thing was fucking fantastic. Because you know, like somebody says, hey, we're going to offer you food. Mm-hmm. And it's very awkward to say no or turn it down, especially when you're in another country and stuff like that. And so I was like, okay, I'll eat it. And so they gave this thing of, it was like a maybe a cup of rice. It was the best chicken wings I've ever had in my life, fried chicken. And then it was boiled on top, and it was wrapped in a banana leaf. And so it's like when you open it, it's like a plate unto its own, even though it's just a leaf. And you talking about good. I said, I looked at it and I was like, okay, what am I going to do with this egg? Do I toss it? I was like, fuck it, just try it. Fantastic.
Had it. We are done, but one more question. Robbie, you got to answer this. No question, but it pleased me greatly last week to see you cuddle your cat. Please tell us a little bit about him or her.
So Freddie, unfortunately, is no longer with us. A couple months ago, she, I don't know that cats would do this. She was testing the screen, and the screen came out, and she, I live on a second story apartment. So she fell out and got ate by some of Montana's larger wildlife.
What?
So unfortunately, Fernie is no longer with us. Her memory is, but I really love that cat. She was sweet, but
got to get a new cat.
Well,
and a better window.
Yeah, it's just what sucks is that here where we rent, there's a $70 a month pet fee, and right now I just can't afford that.
Yeah, no, I hear that. That sucks. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
I hate landlords. I would go full communist if we could abolish landlordism.
Yeah, well, that in communist China, that's mostly what it was all about. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Great fun with you too. Thank you for hanging out with me for the last hour and 15 minutes. We will do it again tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern Time to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Deprogram with Ted Rollins and Jamal Thomas, 9 to 10 a.m. every day, Monday through Friday. Producer Robbie West, thank you so much for all you do. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And you guys have the subscription information on YouTube. Based Robbie, fuck landlords, from horses are people too. Agreed. And ciao.
Have a good one, guys.